Good morning, everyone. I'm Sandra McMasters, just like Debbie said, and Pastor Anna as well. On January 10th of this year, around 11:30 a.m., I received a message from Anna Yoder Slava asking me if I could participate in today's sermon. Before answering, I took my Bible and opened it on the passage she had given me, which is Genesis 12:1-4. Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family's family, and go to the land I will show you. At that precise moment, I felt a lump in my throat, since I immediately related it to my personal experience as an immigrant. As soon as I had recovered, I went to Psalm 121, and I was also touched. But there was something that was preventing me from firmly saying whether I would accept to speak today or not. I will explain why. I am Catholic, and I firmly know that I always will be. But internally, a huge tension broke out. I began to wonder, what will my family say when I tell them that I will be preaching in a Mennonite church? Yeah. To tell you the truth, I don't care as much as I can say about myself. I began to meditate and reflect on this day's theme. Show is your wild hope. And this is where I felt that powerful blow that pushed me to accept. That is why I am here, right? As Debbie mentioned, I'm from Mexico. My hometown is Aguascalientes. I arrived here in Goshen in 1998. I settled here, and since then, I have lived in the same house on 13th Street. How did I get here, and why did I leave my family? And when I say my family, I mean my uncles, my aunts, my cousins, my grandparents. Before I give you the answer, let's explore why people in general leave their countries of origin. Some of you might be thinking, because we leave our country to do mission work through Mennonite Disaster Services, or MCC. Although this might be the truth for you, as Latin Americans, it's not the case. According to the National Immigration Forum and the Justice for Immigrants website, there are two factors by which people leave their country of origin. These factors are known as push or pull factors. Push factors refer to conditions that make it difficult, even impossible, to live in the country of origin, such as insecurity, violence, famine, gender inequality, political corruption, environmental degradation, climate change, lack of access to adequate health care and adequate education, or religious persecution. I know. I think that the issue here now becomes personal for all of you. And although I cannot speak for the whole Catholic Church, I as an individual ask you for forgiveness. However, the pull factors refer to the attractive conditions offered by the country of destination, such as more economic and work opportunities, the possibility of being reunited with family members, a better quality of life, including access to adequate education and health, and of course, religious freedom. Of course, these push or pull factors refer to general patterns, but are not the specific or personal causes of each individual. Therefore, I will address my father's experience and intertwine it with general aspects of migration. September 25th, 1937, my father, Fermín Rodríguez Villagrana, was born to his parents, Francisco Rodríguez Tiscareño and Rosa Villagrana. My father grew up with his brothers, Tránsito, Lucinda, Manuel, Antonia, and Isabel. My father was not given the opportunity to attend a school because he had to work. Eventually, he learned to read and write. To date, I don't know how or who helped him. My mother, Eustolia Virgen Robles Ramos, the eldest daughter of 14 children, only attained the fourth grade of elementary school. But this did not prevent her from overcoming adversity. My father and my mother gave me two brothers and five sisters. I am the seventh of eight. What can I say? We Mexicans are recognized for having large families because children are blessings and are the fruit of their parents' love. While this might be true, this might be complex by wanting to feed eight children, dress eight children, send eight children to school, and take eight children to the doctor. Thank God I only have two daughters, Shaddai and Suzette, and no more. I promise. My father came to the United States in three occasions. The first time he came through the Bracero program, from the Spanish term Bracero, meaning manual laborer, or one who works using his arms. This program was assigned in August 1942. My dad was able to come temporarily and go back home when the farm season was over. He came back and forth for several years until the program came to an end on December 31st of 1964. 21 years later, my father returned to the U.S. This time he became a permanent resident thanks to the Immigration Reform Control Act of 1986, where 2.3 million undocumented immigrants adjusted their immigration status. I should mention that since then, there has been no reform that allows immigrants to obtain citizenship. It's upsetting that some people could make statements rooted in ignorance and racism. Statements such, they need to wait in line, or they need to cross the border legally and follow the rules, right? These people don't know that there are people waiting more than 24 years. They're waiting in line. What better example than my two siblings that have been here since 1996 and have been waiting ever since? Yes, they are still waiting. And as if these were not unfair enough, we have the situation of families, including children on the border of Mexico and the United States, believing that by arriving at the port of entry and requesting entry to the U.S. because in their home country their lives were in danger for different reasons, they would already be allowed legal entry, just like the law says, right? However, this situation that began in 2018 with the caravans continues. The most recent fact that affects immigrants community is that the current president passed on February 24th of this year. It states that if an immigrant tries to apply for residency but received public help, it's considered a public charge, and this becomes a factor to be disqualified. This is yet another struggle in these difficult times. At this point, I ask myself, how by showing hope could I be my white hope? Well, I already told you how my dad came here, and I will tell you briefly my journey to the United States, where I had the blessing of other people showing me their wildest hope. It was Friday, March 6th of 1998, when my father called from Goshen to our then home in Aguascalientes City. He announced that next Monday he would arrive in Aguascalientes to pick me and my sister Zulma and Xiomara up. My dad and his friend were in charge of driving 1,968 miles from Aguascalientes to Goshen. Although we left Aguascalientes on March 11th, we did not get here in 31 hours as recommended by Google Maps. The journey took 21 days. I remember that day we left in the same car that had came just 5 days before, a 1998 brown Grand Marquis. We left before the sunrise. Everything was dark. I remember that I often turned to see through the rear glass and tried real hard to keep those images engraved in my mind as if something deep inside was telling me that I will never come back. At the end of the day, we arrived at the border and stayed with someone my dad knew. You know how it goes. We know someone who knows someone, who knows someone else, and so on. This man allowed us to stay the night at his home. He had two daughters about our age. Our new friend's father told my father that they would try to pass us the next day through the fields. I remember that only my father and his friend talked to each other, and we just had to do what my father told us to. That night, I could hardly sleep because I thought about the promises I made to my friends, that I would never forget them, and that I would have no friends aside from them. Oops. Erica. It was like a pact. In a blink, the next day I came, and there were Zulma, Xiomara, and Sandra running through the field, or should I say walking, since it was very muddy. Regardless, that did not prevent us from moving quickly. We depended on the coyote, the person who was leading us. His orders were, run, wait up, hide, crouch. After all this crossing, we hid under the canopy of a house, a side of the road where someone else had to pick us up, then take us to the safe house. But the border patrol took the lead. They met us first and processed us, then released us. My dad's friend suggested we had to wait a few days before trying again. My father did not want us to go through the same risk, since he feared for our safety. For him, it was essential to keep us safe. Then another friend of my dad's friend, appeared. This man issued us permits to go through the checkpoint. To date, I don't know how much my dad paid for these permits, which took a half day to be issued. Yeah, like immigration worked that fast, right? Next thing I knew, we were once again riding the brown Grand Marquis across the border. Over 2 weeks after we left Aguascalientes, we were crossing the Donna, Texas, Rio Bravo Bridge. Until this day, I firmly believe God was on board with us, because how else can I explain that at the end we didn't need the famous permits as the Border Patrol was letting several cars go right when we hit the checkpoint. The Border Patrol had to inspect a trailer for suspected illegal cargo or drugs. With nothing else, we were in Donna, Texas, at my father's friend's house. He suggested we take advantage of our stay there and spend the weekend. We stayed for Easter. Finally, on April 1st, we arrived here. It was cloudy and rainy day. There were tulips in almost every house's flower beds. As I told you, it took us 21 days to get here. Very quickly, we realized that we were not welcome here. Our neighbor across the street would call the police every time we played our Spanish music. The first 2 years, we focused on going to work and come back home. We drove only for the essential reasons, such as going to work and go get groceries. My brother, Leo, gave me advice on how to drive. Drive as cautiously as possible to avoid being seen as an outlier. He went into so much details that I won't bother to tell you. I could spend the rest of the day talking about all the adversities we went through, but instead, I want to take a few moments to mention that some of you had already shown me that is and must be our wild hope. Among you, there are angels who show me what is goodness, service, unconditional service, fraternity, and loving me as your neighbor. Literally, I live on 13th Street. I will not be here. And not be who I am if it were not for my angels. You inspire me and urge me to resume my studies. Right now, all I want is for God to grant me and continue the legacy that had been transmitted to me and that I can show is my wild hope.